Today is Radhashtami, and I was seeing a very interesting article from the Harmonist magazine. It was published December 1931. That's a few years ago. 76 years ago. And this article was called Sri Radhika, which I thought in the index may be about Radharani. And it is about Radharani, but it approaches the subject of Srimati Radharani, or the personality of Radharani, in a very, what they call an ontological presentation. The philosophy of Radharani's position, spiritual position. So they call the article Sri Radhika, and after I read it, I gave a paraphrase to the article of the soul, the sex principle, and Sri Radha. So, the soul, the sex principle means mitun, sex, S-E-X, man, woman. So now, this is Old English, and in some cases I tried to make it New English, or understandable English. And it's not clear who it's written by, because many of the articles, the editor, the chief editor of the magazine up until 1937, the chief editor of the magazine was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And in some cases, his name is there with some articles, but there are literally hundreds of articles in this collection of books, they don't have any name, but at least he's the editor. So you'll see from the language that it's very much similar to the language of Bhaktisiddhanta. But I want everyone to think about this, because it's actually very, very deep points, and I wanted to share it with everyone, because the whole idea is that basically the supreme male is Krishna, the supreme Purusha, the supreme male. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Rasabhivritya. He is a supreme predominator, the supreme autocrat and the supreme lord. Supreme lord. And everyone else is female. Female by nature. Female by position. So this article is bringing that out, because this problem, male-female, is a big problem. The whole sojourn in the material world is based on these polarities, male, female. And when you hear from this article, it's very interesting to see the primordial, original concept of male and female, and where we as eternal souls fit into that concept is something for us to apply our minds to. Because once, if we can actually capture this principle, and then our spiritual path is quite open, because now we're subjected to this male-female duality and the misconception of our own identity in that paradigm, you can say sexual paradigm. So the article starts like this. As long as the needs means demands, desires, as long as the needs of the physical body, this is the physical body, needs or desires or demands like sex drive or sex desire, as long as the needs of the physical body and the mind remain the determining factors of human choice, men can never rise above animality. In other words, our bodies are pushing us to eat, our bodies are pushing us to sleep, our bodies are pushing us to seek sex gratification, sex satisfaction. And our minds are pushing us for recognition. We want to be recognized. Our minds are pushing us for appreciation. Our minds are pushing us for security. Our minds are pushing us for freedom from fear. All these pushings of the mind. So this first sentence is saying, as long as one is these are the determining factors of our choice. In other words, the choices we make in life, we choose things for our body or we choose things for our mind. So as long as we stay on this platform of choice, choosing things to please our body or our mind, then we are on the platform of animals. The needs of the physical body and mind can never be satisfied, no matter how much one tries. These are old ideas, nothing new to spiritualists, but anything good is worth repetition and bears repeated hearing of such ideas because we don't believe it. Even after so many lifetimes, we still try. I think that I can satisfy. I think I can fulfill. I think I can fulfill and satisfy the needs and demands and desires of my body and mind. One more try. Well, let me try it again. Well, that one didn't work, but this one will. So, okay, try, and what is it? You succeed or something like that?
Try again.
How's it go?
Try till you succeed.
Yeah. Never keep trying. That's the situation. But the real point is, what is the real point? To satisfy the needs of the soul. What we're misinterpreting, what we jivas or living entities is, we are misinterpreting the needs of the body and the needs of the mind to be the needs of us. But us, the individual entity, the jivatma, the individual soul, has different needs. We actually have different needs or different demands. So the real point is to satisfy. We need satisfaction, but it's not of the body and senses or sex drive or eating desire, impulse to eat or to sleep or to get recognition or basic pleasures of the body, but to satisfy the needs of the soul. The pushings or the incessant demands of the physical body and mind are completely separate from our real selves, the Atma, the eternal soul. The physical body and mind have no conscious feelings of their own, independent of the soul. These are like basic points of Aham Brahmasmi in one sense, but you see that he's starting on this level and he builds up gradually. It's like starting in a car, going through the gears, first, second, third, and then cruising speed. So it may seem elementary or fundamental, but each point bears deep thought. But this is an interesting point. He's saying the physical body and mind have no conscious feelings. We think my hand is feeling the sense of touch. We think our physical tongue is tasting food, sweet, sour, bitter, salty, pungent. We think our physical ears are hearing sound, discordant or cacophonous or sweet or bad sounds. And we think our nose is smelling sweet fragrance or bad smells. We think, but this, there's feelings, conscious feelings or perceptions. There's not these senses. It's all being registered. It's all dependent on the soul. They're not independent of the soul. In other words, the soul doesn't need the body. The body needs the soul. For the body to interact, the body and senses to interact with this world or with people of this world, it needs the soul. If you have one body there and the soul leaves, then what will that body do? What feelings will register in that body? Any feelings? No feelings. No sensations. No crying. No laughing. The body has so many expressions and so many experiences. Happy, sad, and laughing and crying and thrilled and depressed and elated. But these are all impulses we think that are being registered and felt in the body and in the mind. But it's only because of the soul this is happening. The physical body and mind have no conscious feelings of their own, independent of the soul. The soul alone possesses consciousness, awareness, or feelings. The so-called demands or pushings of the physical body and mind are really the needs of the soul in this abnormal conditioned state of illusion or maya. So all these pushings, and man is pushed to have woman, or woman's pushed to have man, or pushed to eat or sleep. These are actually there's a deeper origin of all these things. It's not the vagams, uttarapastha vagam, the pushing of the genitals or the mind or the tongue to speak or to communicate. It actually there's some need. It's beyond that. It's beyond the flesh. the need and pushing is beyond the flesh and it's beyond the mind. It's coming from the soul. The soul itself is pushing. The so-called, he puts it in quotations mark, demands, or pushings of the physical body and mind are really the needs of the soul in this abnormal conditioned state of illusion or maya. In other words, when this is abnormal, when the soul is in a normal or proper state, then there's no pushings from the body and the mind. Because the soul is situated, not in maya, is in the spiritual atmosphere. Therefore, it is never possible to fully satisfy those desires. These abnormal material desires or needs must be replaced by the natural spiritual desires or needs of the soul. Oh, I need this, I need that. And we think, a single man thinks, oh, I need wife, I need woman, or woman thinks, I need man, or I need food, I need this. But there are some needs, but these material needs, which are an illusion, must be replaced by the normal spiritual needs. These abnormal material desires must be replaced by the natural spiritual desires of the soul. Then the next question, of course, is what are those? This is the real solution. The sexual tendency represents the need of the soul, the Atma. This is interesting. That's why I say it's a very profound article, actually. If you can digest these points and trace it out, then you'll actually become liberated. Because the bondage to this world basically is attached to our body, first of all, and then the objects of attraction for the body. The sexual tendency, everyone understands what that is, sexual tendency, desire of a man for a woman, desire of a woman for a man, or to compatibility or joining or union or whatever. This represents the need of the soul, the Atma. Physical sex between man and woman is the abnormal or perverted expression of this eternal function of the soul proper. This is, in other words, there's material sex and there's spiritual sex. That's what is being said. Physical sex between man and woman is the abnormal or perverted, means wrong or upside down, crazy. Pervert means upside down, abnormal or incorrect expression of this eternal function of the soul proper. That means the eternal function of every soul is some type of something like sex, but not what we're so mad about in the material world. The perversion or the unwholesomeness of physical or material sex lies in employing the physical body and mind on the mundane plane of gross sense gratification, the plane of exploitation. The natural function of the soul is located on the transcendental plane of dedication to the center. This word center means God. So now we're dedicating to the body. You know, we're misidentifying with the plane. We're on the plane of exploitation. Means I am unfulfilled. I need somebody to satisfy me. I have an urge, I have a desire, I have demand. I have a demand. Demand means a demand. You know, give me something. Demand. I'm demanding. Give me this. I have a demand, I have a need. So I'm searching for someone to exploit. So the natural function of the soul is located on the transcendental plane of dedication. Well, on one side we have exploitation, which is the material world. Exploiting your body for your... You exploiting your own body for your own so-called pleasure, or exploiting other person's bodies for your pleasure. But this is all the wrong plane. This is the vitiated, as they say, vitiated or wrong plane. There's another plane of existence called the plane of dedication. Now we're dedicating to me. I'm the center. the me generation, Hamameti, dedicating everything to me, and the hell with everybody else. Everybody else should orbit around me. You're for me. Mother's for me. Father's for me. Sister's for me. Wife is for me. Children for me. Job is for me. Money's for me. Everything for me. I'm the center. And so there's 5 billion centers in this world because everyone thinks they're the center. So it's a problem. There's no 5 billion centers means no center. Everywhere circumference, nowhere center. But where God is the center, then everywhere center, no circumference. Nowhere. If there's only one center, then there's no circumference. Everyone's dedicated to the one point. Everywhere center and no circumference. This is the plane of dedication. In the spiritual world, everywhere the center and there's no circumference. Interesting phrase. So, just as the soul can be dragged down to the level of the material flesh and gross carnal enjoyment, I mean, just men, women, physical body stuff. Similarly, it is possible to uplift the material mind and body to serve the requirements and needs of the transcendental soul. So now the flesh, the physical body and mind are pulling the soul. Hey, come on, join our party. Come join our party. Help, work with us. Be an illusion, be in Maya. Come with us on the plane of exploitation and help us find some physical pleasure, mental pleasure. So the soul says, okay, take me for a ride. And so then you get taken for a ride, birth after birth after birth after birth, right? Samsara chakra. So that just as a body and dragging the soul down to this plane, the soul can say, well, no, wait a minute. Now you come on my, you vote for my party. And you work for my party. So then the soul can, by changing direction, can uplift the body and the mind, use the body and mind for a higher purpose. It is possible to uplift the material body and mind to serve the requirements and needs of the transcendental soul. The divine soul should be allowed to predominate, not the flesh nor the material mind. That's what liberation is all about. Now we're bound by the flesh and the soul is a slave. In order to establish the natural supremacy of the soul, it is necessary to gain spiritual knowledge of our transcendental identity beyond the present state of ignorance. It's one thing about the articles in Harmonist. Every article, no matter who wrote it, it's all the same language. It's all like really good language. It's high. A lot of it's quite good. This is 1929 English, 1931. In order to establish the natural supremacy of the soul, it is necessary to gain spiritual knowledge of our transcendental identity beyond the present state of ignorance. There is a real plane of positive spiritual activities which appears inconceivable to the conditioned soul. There is a function of the material sexual principle on the spiritual plane. So I remember once when I was in America, there was some book that said, is there sex in heaven or something like that? Or does God have sex or something? You know, there's some funny books that Christians were writing like this. And people, and even that's an issue sometimes, people say, oh, how can God, I remember Rita Ananda Maharaj was giving some lecture. And someone, they were giving a lecture saying, well, actually God also has intimate sexual connections with his transcendental consorts in spiritual bodies in a pure atmosphere of dedication and so many things. Someone raised the question, hey, wait a minute, come on, God can't have sex in some college lecture, right? And then the argument that Maharaj gave, he said, oh, really, you can be more than God. We are here down in this human level, so but you can drink and you can dance and you can have so many, you can have your wife and then so many girlfriends and husband's wife, whatever, and you can enjoy all this man-woman thing. But God can't. Then that means you're more than God. You're a human being. No, because he was saying, no, God, he just sits on a big chair and, you know, he has a big stick and he's, hey, you know, you're bad, you're good. And he doesn't do anything. He doesn't have any fun. He doesn't do anything. So, because if you hear that God's like that, say, forget it, I'll stay here. I'm having... as it said in Milton, was it Paradise Lost? The devil there, I forget what they call the devil, but what was it called? Paradise Lost. Did you read that by Milton? Yeah, in college or high school or something. But there he says the devil is speaking and there was some dialogue. And then the devil means Maya or Kali personified. He said, listen, I would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. I would rather go to hell, but be the ruler. He said reign. I'd rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. But our philosophy in Gaudiya Vaishnavism is, I would rather serve in hell than rule in heaven. We don't want to go to Swarga Loka to heaven and rule. You know, we want to serve. We'd rather serve than rule. So there's a function of the material sexual principle on the spiritual plane. This is very intriguing. That function is categorically different from the corresponding physical and mental activities of sex. The appearance of the natural spiritual function should replace the abnormal expression of this activity on the material plane. In other words, we have to find out what is that spiritual function? What is that actual internal demand that can be fulfilled on the spiritual plane, which will enable us to give up all these demands of the physical plane, which is in the most powerful expression is a combination of man and woman. In the real spiritual function, male and female have distinctive natures as complementary personalities. Because we live in this material world and we're surrounded everywhere in all species we find, especially in our own species of human beings, we have this male and female principle. Purush, what does it say? Stri and Admi, right? Stri and Admi. We can't avoid. In the real spiritual function, male and female have distinctive natures as complementary personalities. But the two are essentially one. So we have male and female, but they complement each other. Even in this world, we say that the man complements the woman. The woman is the better half of man, or whatever. Behind every great man is a great woman, or behind every great woman is a great man, or whatever. You know, all these phrases, chauvinistic phrases, are there. But anyway, you find this polarity, the aggressive and the receptive, the yin and the yang, the positive, negative, the man and the woman, male and female principle. But it's there, so it's also there in the spiritual domain. There's male principle and female principle, and they're complementary. Which means, what does complementary mean?
Synergistic to each other.
No, it's simple English. How do you say complementary?
Just mean support each other.
Support. So they support each other.
Match. Like pieces in a puzzle.
Like pieces in a puzzle, they match. But so there's two, they're complementary, but the two are essentially one. So this now you can see how this argument where he's making a connection. The connection, of course, that's also like a pun in one sense. But he's making the connection between the male and female principle of based on the material body, male bodies and female bodies, and the whole drive of the male and female principle is for the male and female principle to unite. Unite means mitun, sex enjoyment, sexual union. The male is endeavoring, practically as Freud was saying, all the endeavors in the material world are simply for unification or union, man and woman, sex union. So, but this is actually this. So this principle, male-female principle being two, but essentially they're one because they're meant to be combined. There's union there. There's also union there in the spirit. So this union here of the male and female principle is a perverted reflection of the union of the male and female principle in the spiritual world. And this is what self-realization is all about. It's not denial of our nature, but it's discovering our real transcendental nature, which we can once and for all transcend this debilitating and limited nature of male and female material principle. The two are essentially one, and that's what, when a man and woman combine, the two bodies become one. This is what union means, in one sense. This supplies the clue to the nature of the wholesome, pure relationship between two personalities. Very interesting statement. What is it? This means this principle that in the spiritual world there is a male and a female principle or nature, and they complement each other, they match each other, they work together, but they're essentially one. There's one circle. There's one interest, center of interest. This supplies a clue to the nature of the wholesome, pure relationship between two personalities. As one is the predominator half, one is the predominator half of the absolute truth. That is the absolute male principle. The other is the predominated half of the absolute truth. That's the absolute female principle. The predominated absolute female has a natural tendency to obey every order of the predominator absolute male for fulfilling all his desires. So this is, now he's trying to bring the article from the male and female principles of this world to the male and female principle of the spiritual world, which is embodied or represented by Krishna and Radha, or Lakshmi and Narayan, or whatever, Sita and Ram. One is predominator, one is predominator, but they're complementary to each other, like a flower and its fragrance, or the light, the sun and its light. They need each other, they're inseparable. Not that one is supreme or the other is subordinate. They complement each other. Sri Krishna alone is the Godhead, and Srimati Radharani alone serves Sri Krishna. This is the only absolute truth. Sri Krishna is the ultimate source of all receivers of service, and Sri Radha is the ultimate source of all renderers of service. So everyone who's receiving service, being served in this world or any place, they're actually taking the place of God, of Krishna. And anyone who's rendering service, their mood of giving or rendering service, the source of that mood or giving service is actually Srimati Radharani. Sri Krishna is the only object of all worship and the recipient of all services. However, no individual soul should take service on his own account. This points to the true significance of the scriptural injunction to abstain from all sexual activities if one wants to qualify to eternally serve Krishna on the spiritual plane. Because basically, what keeps one in the material world is a desire for sex relation, man and woman. So when one has that desire, that means he wants to be the receiver of service. He wants to receive service or some pleasure from some other entity. Then he's denying Krishna of that service, where all the service should be offered to him. So until one comes to this conception and conviction, which is self-realization, that everything is for him, everything for him, everything for the center, and the center is God, and then he can't enter the spiritual world. So no individual soul should take service on his own account. So that's why the basic scriptures everywhere, there's either limitation of the sex act, or there's mostly in the more developed scriptures, they say this has to be transcended. One has to actually leave this behind to enter the spiritual world. Because it's an imitation. This activity is an imitation of the pure expression of loving service. So then the imitation is perverted. It's the material expression. The positive platform of serving Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world of bliss can be attained only by those who are completely freed from the disease of mundane sexual desire. The infinite variety of Radha and Krishna's divine pastimes constitutes the only reality. That's an interesting statement. Because we might have to argue with that. Wait a minute, my world is very real. What I'm doing is very real. And my relationships in this world, or my family, friends, and lovers, etc., what I'm doing, it seems very real and meaningful to me. But there's certainly, it's very limited what we do. We only have a handful of activities we do. We eat, we sleep, we work. As they say, ahara nidra maitun bayam. Eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And we meet a few friends, and sometimes we go out to eat, or sometimes we do five or six few things, not much variety, most people of the world. Their lives are rather circumscribed, boring, and humdrum. But it says here, infinite variety. Radha and Krishna's pastimes are an infinite variety of divine pastimes. This constitutes the only reality. Means there. This, of course, this is a realization. This is a perception, which is the perfect perception, and this is actually the fact that their pastimes. This is the only reality. Everything else is part of that, or partial expression of that, or imitation of that. Krishna is the absolute predominator, the transcendental autocrat, and Radhika is the absolute predominated. The absolute Godhead, Sri Krishna, is eternally a pair. He's not one. This is pretty good, huh? Sri Krishna is eternally a pair and not one. God is two, not one. I just say God is one, right? Sometimes. God is one. There's only one God. Christians, Mohammedans, Hindus, every Buddhist, every there's only one God. Why should we fight? Unity, harmony, United Nations. Well, we say, no, God is two. Sorry about that. I don't mean to blow up the United Nations and blow up the sense of unity, but it's unity and diversity. That Sri Krishna is this. God is. Well, where was I reading here? The absolute God is Sri Krishna is eternally a pair, not one. God is two, not one. God is both Sri Krishna and Sri Radha. Sri Radha is as absolute as Sri Krishna himself. Harivo Mahavasurupini Radharani ki jai. Sri Radha is identical with and eternally distinct from Sri Krishna. Sounds familiar? Sounds like Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, right? Inconceivably, simultaneously, one and different. Sri Radha is identical with and eternally distinct from Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna is the eternal transcendental male, and Sri Radha is the eternal transcendental female. But neither Radha nor Krishna... Now, okay, this is really good. Sri Krishna is the eternal transcendental male. Okay, all right, that sounds good. And Sri Radha is the eternal transcendental female. You got that? Okay, now you ready? But neither Radha nor Krishna are male or female in the limited worldly sense. So remember, they're transcendental. Sri Krishna alone is the one supreme master. Ekala Ishvara Krishna, we said. No one shares Krishna's mastership. He's number one. If someone did, then Krishna could not be in the position to predominate over every living entity. In other words, it's pretty obvious. Either you're the Supreme Lord or you're not. Right? You're Lord. Okay, Lord Indra, Lord Brahma. Okay, but I be the Supreme Lord. You're the Lord, but I'm Supreme Lord. There's nobody above me, right? That's what they say. What is that? Aparusheya? What is not? No. Asam Urdhva. Asam Urdhva. Asam. Sama equal and Urdhva above. So no one is equal to me and no one is above me. So this is one word to describe God probably to use. Asam Urdhva. So Krishna, he's that one. He's that one. He is that one person. The Ekatvam. So Krishna alone is the one supreme master. So that's basic logic. If someone else shared his mastership, then it'd be like Indian politics. Then he could not be called the Supreme Lord. Although there is only one male predominator, Sri Krishna, there are many female consorts or predominated persons. See, there's many. But Srimati Radharani alone is the source of all the consorts of Sri Krishna. The loving services of all the consorts of are associated aspects of the service of Sri Radha. They're all, in other words, that means that Radharani, the other places are described about the Kayavyuha, the direct expansions of Radharani's body. It's as if she wants, say she wants, like in this Ayurvedic massage in South India, they have this, what are they called, Panchakarma. In some of those massages, they have like 5-6 people working on one body. One guy on one leg, one guy on another leg, one guy on your arm, one guy on another arm. One guy rubbing your belly and chest, that's 4, that's 5. And one guy heating up the oil and passing out the hot, you know, cotton balls or whatever. You know, so there's 6 guys to massage one body. One on each leg and arm, and then 4 or 5, and like this. So Radharani wants to serve Krishna in so many different ways, with different bhavas, different moods of love, different attitudes, and different specialities and different services. But she's only one form. So she expands herself into Lita, Vishaka, Tungavidya, etc., and even the Manjaris, and so many forms. And they all become, they're associated aspects of her own desire to serve Krishna. They're the personification of her desire. Just like sometimes we say, oh, I wish I had 4 arms. Then I could type on the computer and cook my lunch at the same time. Or I wish I could expand myself. Someone wants us to preach in 3 places at once. And oh, if I had 4 forms, I could give Janmashtami lecture in Bombay, Delhi, and Moscow, and Gopal Krishna Maharaj, and some of these big people like that, or like this. So Radharani is not limited. So she does exactly that. So all these different consorts that serve Krishna in different loving ways, they're actually aspects of the service of Radha. The example is given that once Srimati Radharani left the Rasa dance, then Krishna immediately left in search of Radha. This proves that in the presence of the presence and the combined services of millions of Brajagopis or female consorts assembled at the Rasa Mandala could not equal the super excellent services of the one female consort, the absolute female consort, the one Srimati Radharani. Sri Radhika is the source of all individual souls whose function is to be engaged in the service of Sri Krishna. Interesting statement. Sri Radhika is the source of all individual souls whose function is to be engaged in the service of Sri Krishna. The individual souls serve Sri Krishna as parts or assistants of Sri Radhika. When they forget they are parts of Sri Radhika, they forget the spiritual nature of their own selves and they engage in abnormal activities on the spiritual plane. The relation between one individual soul and another is that of cooperating with each other. This is a little bit different than exploiting each other. The relation between one individual soul and another is that of cooperating with each other as parts or assistants of Sri Radhika in the performance of their allotted service of Sri Krishna. In other words, all the individual souls are spiritual females in a subordinate position to Sri Radhika, whose service of Krishna they naturally share by their nature as her parts or assistants. The duty of the individual souls is to learn to obey and follow Sri Radhika, for by serving Sri Radhika, they can best serve Sri Krishna. So this is how he brings us from the carnal platform of sex pleasure on this plane of exploitation between material men and women to the point of being enjoyed by Krishna as an assistant to Radharani, who is offering her everything to Krishna at every moment. and all the immediate expansions of our body, or even all the ultimate energetic expansions, because the jivatma is a tatastha shakti. So she's sarva shakti mayi. Radharani is the source of all shaktis. So I'll read this last couple sentences again, because this is so wonderful, that ultimately every energetic particle, every particle of energy in this entire creation is meant for the pleasure of the center. Because every particle of energy is a particle of consciousness. And so every particle of consciousness is imbued with Ladini, or at least you can say Ananda. Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini. Every particle of consciousness is eternal and has the ability to love or enjoy, and has ability to know or be known. So this ultimately, because the ultimate, the perfect relationship is the service of Godhead, who is one, we've established, and the perfect servitor of that one Godhead is the one Srimati Radharani. So there's only one predominator. So every jiva, every energetic particle is predominated. Every particle of energy, whatever the shakti is, that shakti is meant to be engaged in the service of the Shaktiman, in the service of Krishna. So that channel, that service channel, or that way that service is channeled or offered to the hands of Krishna is through the hands of Radha. Everything goes through Radharani's hands. So we are meant, ultimately, of course, Radha for some jivas may be on the Vaikuntha plane, but at least in this presentation, it's presenting the jivas on the Vrindavan plane of supermost dedication. So when the individual souls serve Krishna as parts or assistants of Sri Radhika, that's a correct position. Like Prabhupada once he said on one tape, he said that we can't approach Krishna directly, but we must go through his devotee. And the best devotee is Srimati Radharani. So we pray to Srimati Radharani, "Oh Srimati Radharani, please tell about me to your Krishna." Please tell about me to your Krishna. So while someone might say, "Well, why don't you go tell Krishna yourself about yourself? Just go knock on his door and give you a report. Say, listen, Krishna, I'm here. I have to tell you about myself." But the thing is that he's busy with Radharani. So better, and he's so bewildered and Mohan and Mohini with Radharani that he won't know anybody's ringing on his cell phone or knocking on his door. He won't hear anything. So at least you have to approach the soft side. The soft side of God is the Karuna aspect, the compassionate aspect. So Krishna is the hard side, and Radharani is the soft side. That's generally experienced in this world, that the man is the hard side and the woman is the soft side, generally. Exceptions are there. And when the son can't get by with the father, then he goes to the mother. At least our experience, and my brothers and myself, is like this. So the sons of God, all of us are sons of the Father God, Aham Bija Pradapita. So our best fortune is to be found at the feet of Karunamayi Radharani, the soft side, the tender side, the tender counterpart. Sukomala Kumari. Raghunath Das describes Radharani as Sukomal. Sukomala Kumari. Kumari already means tender. Kumari means a virgin girl, Kumari. She's tender, and she's sweet and soft and innocent. But then he goes further to say Sukomal. That means very soft, Komal, like we say Komala Shraddha. For the Kanishta or Prakriti Bhakta, his faith is very pliable, very weak, very soft, and breakable, easily destroyed. But she's Sukomala Kumari. He's very, very, very tender, soft-hearted. Everything about Radharani is soft and tender. Although sometimes the gopis, they fear putting Krishna's feet on their breasts because his feet are so soft. But that's another point. But just to review this last couple sentences. When the jivas forget they are parts of Sri Radhika, very interesting idea, because generally in the Bhagavad Gita we hear that Mamayavamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatana Manasya Stani Indrani Prakriti Stani Karshati. The Krishna is telling Arjuna that the jivas are my amshas. But ultimately, because when he's saying that my means my aspect of Radharani, basically. Mama, because he's saying Mamayavamsho, Mama Amsha. So Mama, my, because Radharani is his Shakti Amsha. Radharani is, all the Shakti is with Radharani. She's Sarva Shakti Mayi. That means Sarva Shakti, she's made of all the Shakti. All the power and potency is with her. She's the world bank, and Krishna has to draw money from her. If he wants to do anything, he has to take out money from the bank. Any country wants to develop themselves or do anything, then they have to borrow some money from the world bank. So if Krishna wants to accomplish anything, then he has to take a loan from Radharani. And that's what the jivas are doing here. In imitation of God, we're taking a loan from the material nature. All the scientists, all the inventors, all the people in this world, we're exploiting nature. Nature means Shakti. We say Mother Nature. Mother Nature means female. Shakti. So we're taking a loan. And now nature is collecting the interest. And we have to pay back the loan. You know, we split the atom, make atomic energy, but then it heats up the atmosphere, so the ice caps melt, and now we're getting drowned. So that's a loan. I had to pay back the loan. So this, so when we forget that actually we're parts and parcels, not of Krishna, but parts and parcels of Radhika, when they forget their spiritual nature of their own selves and engage in abnormal activities in mundane plane. Now this is the key point about this world, how to spiritualize this world. The relation between two individual souls, or excuse me, one individual soul and another, is that one is cooperating with each other. That of cooperating with each other as parts or assistants of Sri Radhika in the performance of their allotted service of Sri Krishna. So that means that there's one center and everyone should cooperate. Radharani is like the ringmaster, the master of ceremonies. She's the conductor, the coordinator of all services, from the lowest to the highest, from Dasyarati to Madhurarati, from Parakya to Swakya. Everything is coordinated and inspired by Radharani. Even the queens of Dwarka are remembering Radharani, they're thinking about Radharani, they're aspiring to be like Radharani, and they know about her glories. Everyone knows. Narada Muni, the demigods, Brahma, everyone knows about Radharani. It's not possible to be ignorant of Radharani. So the jivas, they are meant to... She is like the temple commander. You have these temples in the West, and they have a temple commander, and his duty is to engage everyone in the temple, make sure they're doing service all day, pretty much, as I recall. So in this whole creation, in this tripad vibhuti, in the spiritual world and the material world, or ekpad vibhuti, the whole thing, material and spiritual world, everyone is meant to be directed by and engaged and directed by Srimati Radharani, engaged in the service of Krishna. So in the spiritual world, you can't avoid the lordship of Radharani, Vrindavan Ishwari. She is the Ishwari of all of Vrindavan. So all of Vrindavan is moving under her will, and all of Vrindavan is serving Krishna under her will. All the birds, all the trees, all the Van Devis, and all the Sakis, Mandaris, Yashoda, Nandababa, the cowboys, everybody is actually moving under her energy and with her sanction. So she is the taskmaster. She's the temple commander of the spiritual world. Radharani. Everybody. It's very nice. So we should cooperate. When Gorakishore, one Grihastha couple met Gorakishore, and the man was very happy. Oh, I just got married. This lady's my wife, and she's going to serve me now. And then Gorakishore, he tried to correct his mentality. He said, "You should think that you're Krishna Das, and your wife is Krishna Dasi, and you should serve your wife, and help, and together you should serve Krishna. You should in the morning you should dress your wife." He told him, "You should dress your wife and serve your wife. She's Krishna Dasi. You should help her. You should help her get dressed so she can do her service to Krishna." He was like, "Whoa, wait a minute. I thought I was just embarking on a whole life of kingship, and this girl, this lady is going to be my slave and cook for me and sing for me and entertain me and all these things. And now you're telling me I have to become her servant? And we have to cooperate." So this is the actual, the ultimate reality of spiritual perfection, is to that the men, the males and females of this world, or on this plane or any plane, everyone, cooperation. We cooperate as parts and assistants of Radhika in the performance of their allotted service of Sri Krishna. That was one phrase Prabhupada used before he left this world. He said that your love will be shown for me by how much you cooperate. In other words, all individual souls are spiritual females in a subordinate position to Sri Radhika, whose service of Sri Krishna they naturally share by their nature as her parts and assistants. The duty of the individual souls is to learn to obey and follow Sri Radhika, for by serving Radhika they can best serve Krishna. So how do you serve Radhika? And how do you learn to obey Radhika? Yeah, very good, thank you. Srimati Dasi has told us the best way to serve Srimati Radhika is to serve her representatives in this world, who are the pure Vaishnavas, or Vaishnavis, whoever they are, and sometimes taking the role of, usually they're taking some role as well-wishers of others, acting as Shiksha Gurus or Diksha Gurus. Or there's always some, even just friends become friends on the basis of their Shiksha. So everyone is always teaching and everyone is always learning. Teaching others and learning from others. So this is how we can learn. We learn to obey Guru. Guru Bhakti matures into Krishna Bhakti or Radha Bhakti. So this is, of course, that's what it means, Guru Shishya Sambandha. The relationship between Guru and Shishya is based on obedience. That's what disciple, the word disciple means discipline. Discipline means obedience. To follow the order, to try to please Vishramba, to have an intimate feeling of friendship, a curious combination of intimate friendship and respect. This is called Vishramba. Vishrambena Gurur Seva in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's maybe the fourth principle of the 64 principles, Vishrambena Gurur Seva, which we define as a curious combination of intimate friendship and respectful regard. It's that the Guru is situated in a friendly position to me. That's like the, it's kind of similar to the verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse 29, where Krishna is establishing what Prabhupada calls the peace formula. But in one sense, Krishna is establishing, it's a beautiful blend of Aishwarya and Madhurya, because Krishna establishes his omnipotency. We say that God is omnipresent and, what is it, omniscient. And what are all those omni words? Omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. The three O's. G-O-D. And so God is... So that verse starts off with Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshram. So in the beginning of the verse, it's all on reverence. It's all respectful distance. That Bhoktaram, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifice. All sacrifice is meant for me. I am the enjoyer, the beneficiary. I am the recipient of all yagyas and sacrifices. Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam. I am the supreme enjoyer. Bhoktaram Yagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshram, Maheshram. I am the controller of all the planets. I control millions of planets. You talk about ME or managing MD or managing director or CEO or something. What do they say? CEO, chief executive officer. India is like the land of letters. Everybody's an SP or a PS or SPS and SPP. I mean, I'm in America, I never heard all these terms. But in India, there's like millions. They have millions of kinds of relatives, a shashur and a datu and a shashu and a jiju they have a name, like your sister's brother's cousin. There's a name for that. There's a specific name for that. And your mother's father's brother. There's a name for that. So there's all these differences. So in this verse in Gita, Krishna is saying that I'm the supreme. Sarvalok Maheshram, that I'm controlling all the planets, and they're all in my fist, and I'm so powerful, I'm controlling everything. So now, these first two lines of the verse, you're standing like this with folded hands, in chapter 5 of Gita 29. Oh, God, he's a supreme, you know, all yogi is meant for him, and he's a supreme controller, and he owns all the planets. And then you're like shaking, you know, you're trembling. It's like seeing the Virata Rupa or something of Arjuna. And then the next thing he says, but actually, you know, you're standing like this, you know, oh God, you're all the yogi is meant for you, Bhaktaram Yogatavasam, Sarvaloka Mahesh, and you're the supreme lord of all Sarvaloka, every single millions and millions of planets. Wow, you're too big, you're too grand. He says, ah, that's nothing, man. Then he comes and he puts his arm around, he says, actually I'm your Surit. I'm your bosom buddy. I'm your heartly friend. You know, he says, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. He says, don't you know I'm in your heart? I'm just sitting with you, shaking hands, and I'm your best friend. So then he comes down and just sits in our heart and is so close to us. And he says, hey, don't worry about all that stuff. It's just you and me, we're friends, you know. You love me, I love you. You serve me, I serve you also. You're in my heart, I'm also in your heart. Don't worry about that whole display. I just want to let you know, that's going on. But, you know, between you and me, it's just, you know, just like the guy may be the prime minister or the president of America. But when he goes home, his mother sits him on his lap. Oh, how you doing? Pinches his cheek. Are you getting enough to eat? Are they feeding you in the White House? You getting enough food in the White House? You know, his mother just thinks he's a hungry boy, a hungry son. There's no Aishwarya there. So this is Vishramba. This verse 529 is showing this concept of Vishrambena Guror Seva, that this curious combination of sweet intimacy with Guru and respectful regard. Kind of like double thing. Because generally what we see, and this is what's told, this is a part of the bhakti. Bhakti is what we're all about, and this is how, and Radharani, of course, bhakti is an amsha of Radharani. Everything's personified. Every atom is personified. Every single atom is conscious, and every single atom is personal. As Krishna's in every atom, and he's the supreme person. And Krishna's with Radharani, so Radharani's in every atom. We're sitting on Radharani, we're breathing Radharani, we're leaning on Radharani. So this bhakti principle, this personified is representing Radharani as a Devi. We say bhakti Devi. So this is actually Radharani's representation, if you want to personify as a Devi. Bhakti Devi, because everything's personified. Vidya Devi and Leela Devi and all these personified energies are there. So this is something about Radharani's ontology. And then, so there's a brief entry in Garga Samhita about Radhika's birth, which I never recorded before, so I'll just read it. It's kind of very, it's amazing how the entire Garga Samhita is so little to say about Radharani. Placing her glorious form, transcendental form, in the womb of King Vrishabhanu's wife, Sri Radha descended into a great palace in a garden by the shore of the Yamuna in the month of Bhadra today. The sky was covered with clouds to celebrate Radha's descent. The demigods scattered flowers that had blossomed in the Nandan gardens. So those are the gardens everyone's heard about, Nandakanana, and they're in the heavenly planets. And all the flowers were blossoming just in time to be showered on Radharani's head. Because of Radha's descent, the rivers became very pure and clear. The directions became auspicious and happy, and graceful, gentle, cooling breezes carried the pollen of lotus flowers. Gazing at her daughter, as beautiful as hundreds of moons, the gopi Kirti, this just Kirti, became happy. To bring auspiciousness, Kirti gave 200,000 cows in charity to please the brahmanas. Then, being placed on a jeweled swing, Radha, who was decorated with sandalwood paste, shone brightly. So apparently she started Julan Yatra when she was born. It's saying she was placed, it's talking about her birth, and it's saying that she was placed on a jewel swing, a Ratna Hindola. So she started Jula Nyatra at the time of birth. And she was covered with sandalwood paste and decorated, and she shone brightly. Thus Radha, the heroine of the Rasleela, the jewel in the necklace of Krishna, appeared in the house of King Vrishabhanu. So this was narrated by Narada Muni to King Bahulashva, who was described in the Krishna book also, that Krishna went to visit him. So he was a great devotee of the Lord, and he was very eager to hear about the Lord. So that's a very limited description of Radharani. Generally we hear, and we've also told, the story which comes from Padma Purana about Radharani's birth, which is quoted here in the commentaries by Shrivananda Das and Sri Stavavali. He quotes the Sanskrit here, and we can read there. This is the more familiar story, because the idea when we don't hear these things very often, but when we hear them, each time we hear them, we may remember a little bit more, and that this, the sweetness of the pastime, has what they call Lila Shakti, which leaves a certain coating inside the mind and heart. And the coating, it's kind of like arsenic poisoning. If you drink water that has arsenic in it, every day a little arsenic gets stored up in your liver. And every day a little more and a little more. And finally you die of arsenic poisoning because of repeated exposure by drinking every day water with arsenic. Arsenic is a heavy metal that occurs especially in the water in Navadvip Mandal, as you must be knowing. And so this is not exactly heavy metal, but this is heavy mercy. And it describes when we hear these leelas of Radha and Krishna over and over again, a little deposit is made in our heart. Little drops are made. That's why our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he told us we should read the Krishna book over and over again. Every day one chapter, we finish the 90 chapters and go again. So that would mean, if we actually followed Prabhupada's instruction, that every 3 months you would have read the 10th canto once with the commentaries of a realized devotee, which would enable us to somewhat perceive some of the esoterica of Krishna's lila, janma karma chame divyam. So every 3 months, one time, 10th canto. That means in 1 year, 4 times. So if you've been in the movement 20 years, that means you've read the Krishna book 80 times. So how many of us have executed that order of Srila Prabhupada to read every day one story of the Krishna book? I have to be, I'm one of the offenders also myself. At least we can appreciate that he didn't shortchange anyone on where they could find treasure. Treasures are here. I'm leaving the estate to all of my children. And please you dig over here and find the wealth. And then you'll be satisfactorily rewarded. But if you choose to act independently and ignore the treasure, that's your free will. So this description is what we usually hear. And this nice, there's an entry here. It's just, this is mentioned in Padma Puran, and then it's retold in Bengali in Bhakti Ratnakar. Because every year there was not only is an interesting point is that besides the janma or appearance, transcendental appearance of Radharani, there's also a birthday party every year. And Radharani makes it a point. It just so happens that she has a revolving schedule of spending 3 months a year with her so-called husband, Abhimanyu, and sister, Kutila, and her mother, Jatila, in their home in Yavatgram. And after 3 months there, Radharani is pretty much ready for a break. So she goes back to her mother's house in Varsana, Kirti, and Vrishabhanu. to meet her brother, Sridham. Of course, her sister, Anangamandri, is living with her in Yavat. She's married to Durmad. That's a good name. Durmad. Durmad means bad intelligence. Durmad means bad intelligence, means you're like dull. Like, also dur means dull, like stonehead or blockhead. So Anangamantri married Durmad, the younger brother of Abhimanyu. So two sisters married two brothers and went off to Yavat. I can't say to live happily ever after. But Radharani comes home every year to stay in Barsana during the month of Shravan, Bhadra, and Ashwin. Shravan Mas just passed. This is the rainy season, Julan Yatra time. So Radharani wants to swing here and there with Krishna and all different Kadambakandi and different places without any influence of her mother-in-law, any spying or any problems. Because once she goes to her mother's house, then her mother-in-law leaves her alone, because then she's under the guidance and protection of her original mother. And moreover, Jatila has no say over there. Jatila is a trespasser there. This is a standard point, even in modern-day Indian families, that if someone goes to their mother's house, it's considered very unusual for the mother-in-law to come visit. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
No.
Even now, if a married girl goes home to her mother's house, there's no way your mother-in-law is going to go to her village and say, "What are you doing?" It doesn't happen. So when Radharani goes to Barsana, she's free and easy. She's comfortable. She's very relaxed, very comfortable, very happy. She's really at peace. And she's in a good mood. And this is Bhadra Mas. She's born in this month, and Balaram is born in this month. According to Garga Samhita, Balaram was born a few days ago on Shasti and Dalji. Balaram was born this month, according to Garga Samhita. Krishna was born this month, and Radharani is born. Krishna was born in Krishna Astami, and Radharani is born in Shukla Astami. That makes sense. He's Krishna. Krishna Astami means the dark part of the month, and Shukla means white or golden, because Radharani is golden and golden white. So she's born in Shukla, and he's black, unreliable. He's born in the Krishna time. So one is Ashtami, and the other is Ashtami. So now she's in. So when they have the birthday party, then this is described by Siddha Krishnadas in one of his, I guess, Gutikas or something, that the birthday, when Krishna has his birthday party, then he sends an invitation to Barsana to Banu Maharaj. Actually, Nanda Maharaj sends the invitation. And Banu Maharaj packs up, the five Banus come, Bishop Banu Maharaj and his brothers, and then Kirtida, and Radharani and Sridham and Anangamandri. And everyone comes, and they stay for 3 days. It's a three-day party in Nandagaon. And in the palace, in the 50 rooms of Nanda Baba, in Nandagaon, there's one bedroom, guest bedroom for Radharani, and there's one guest bedroom for Anangamandri, and one for Bishop Banu and Kirtida. Like you may, if you're a rich man, you have guest bedrooms. So these are guest bedrooms, but they're designated. And it's just by coincidence, Radharani's guest bedroom, guess what? It's right next to Krishna's bedroom. Oh, what didn't you know about that? What an interesting coincidence. I wonder how that happened. Is this Vastu or is this Feng Shui? This must be a Vastu consideration. This is the best use of space. Vastu is the god of space. So the best use of space is to dedicate it to the pleasure pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So they stay there and they have three-day party, birthday party, singing, dancing, gifts, all so many things, and worshipping the brahmanas, and lots of free time for sporting in Gavarvan and Nandagaon and Tarakadam and all over the place. So now we have to go back in time a little bit to the Padma Puran, and this gives a little bit different description. In the Padma Puran, in the Patal Kanda, it describes how Devarshi Rishi, he came to Ravalgram and saw Radharani just after she was born. When Sri Radha, who was overwhelmed by love for Krishna, descended, when she she appeared in this world, she decided before coming to this world that she did not want to look at anything in the world before seeing Krishna. So when she was born, her eyes were closed. Sometimes they say she was born blind. But that was voluntary blindness. It was not imposed by karma. It was her loving will, expression of her love, her sankalpa. One day, Devarshi Narada came to see baby Radha. He told Maharaj Brishabhanu that he wanted to cure the little girl of her blindness. Then Brishabhanu told him, Ekasti putrika deva deva patyanu pama mama kaniyasi shishurasya jaranda bharirakriti utsahad buddhaye yache tamvaram bhagavattama prasana drishti matrena sustiram kurubalikam. He said, O Lord Narad, I have one daughter who is equal to the demigoddesses. Eka putrika deva deva patnya anupam. And she is younger than the child Sridham. But, he says, she's jad anda badir akriti. Jada means like Jad Bharat, fifth canto of Bhagavatam. He acted like stone-like. He was seen to be inert. He was rather appear to be dumb. So Jada means stone-like and anda means blind. Anda jana. Griham andakupam. They say the blind well of family life. Griham andakupam. Kupa means well. So she was Jad Ananda, Padma Prana is saying. So Brishabhanu is narrating to Narad, listen, she's the younger sister of Sridham, but this daughter of mine, she is dumb, blind, and deaf. O greatest of saints, Bhagavat Uttam, he says, we say Mahabhagavat, he's saying Varam Bhagavatama. Bhagavat Uttam. Varam means like we say Govardhan. Vardhan means to increase or glorious or excessive. You're excessively topmost Bhagavats. O greatest of saints, I am very eager to fondle and rear my child. So I pray to you for this boon. Please cure this child with your satisfied glance. Prasanna drishti matrena sustiram kurubalikam. Kuru balikam. Balika means this balak, like we say, chalak balak. Chalak balak means clever, mischievous boy or something. Or
yes,
so balakam, like we say, go balyalila, means this child, this little baby from 1 or 2, 3 years old, small baby. Sustira, please make them very steady, very fixed in proper position. Prasanna drishti. Prasanna means your satisfied glance. Because of the sages are Atmaram Munis. And they're Aptakam and Atmaram. Their Aptakam means they have no desire to fulfill because they are absorbed in fulfilling Krishna's desire. That's an interesting point. Say Apta, A-P-T-A, Aptakam, Tam means desire. They have no desire to fulfill because their only desire is, they're busy fulfilling Krishna's desire. They have no personal agenda. They have no ulterior motive. Their only motive is to please Krishna. Your wish is my command, they say like this. Or the genie says like this. The fabled genie of yore. You rub the Aladdin lamp and the genie comes out and said, my wish is your command. You say, okay, well, make everybody chant Hare Krishna. Or whatever. You know, or make me chant Hare Krishna to start with. Start with me. And so this aptakam, the rishis, they have no desire to fulfill because they're completely absorbed at every moment fulfilling the desire of Krishna. The natmaram means their atma, they're satisfied. They're satisfied, so they're enriched. They say that sometimes about bread, enriched with vitamins. So they're enriched with satisfaction. And they're not only enriched with satisfaction, but they're overflowing with satisfaction. That's what prasanna means. Prasanna means you have a glass and you put water in it. Then it fills up with some water. And then, okay, it's full. But now it's overflowing. Overflowing. If you keep pouring water, then it goes full and going down the sides. And then the table, oh, too much the table. Look, table's getting wet. Oh, the floor is getting wet. This water is flowing everywhere, in the cup and around and over the cup. So this is prasanna drishti. Because of their inner satisfaction, it's flowing out of them. It's not only swirling within them and rising within them, create certain ecstasies and bhavas of their own attachment and absorption in a relationship with Bhagavan, but it is oozing out of them. It's dripping out of them. It's gushing out of them to whatever extent they are developed in pure consciousness. So therefore, their words are full of this prasanna, or their drishti. Drishti means their sight, their glance. So recognizing this and understanding, first of all, the principle of this, and recognizing this principle embodied in the form of Narada Muni, this simple, so-called simple coward man, Nanda Maharaj, who was quite learned in these features, he said, prasanna drishti matrena. Matrena means just a moment, just glance, prasanna drishti, just glance. Nowadays, people have accepted, to some extent, the subtle phenomenon of something called Reiki healing, ki or chi or whatever it is, Reiki or Reiki, is some type of like energy flow. In the body, everyone knows there's these different healing systems around the world which are based on flow of energy. In yoga, they have the chakras and the kundalini shakti. And in Chinese medicine, they have the acupressure and the balancing the qis and the energies of the body. So this, what they call Reiki healing, they balance your aura, they balance your energy flow of your body just by moving their hands over your body without even actually touching. But there's some adjustment of energy. The healer has some balancing power and corrective power in his hands, in his body. So we don't know what he does. We just lie there and he moves his hands this way, that way, and then we feel good. The pain goes away, the disease becomes reduced. They have some effect. So we have this experience. So saints, that's the laying on of the hands, or almost laying on of the hands, some energy. They're doing something. In other words, they're creating an effect with their energy. So this prasanna drishti is the same way. Just by glancing, it's called lochan kripa. In the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains how one of the ways that one can get bhav, or different ways one can get bhav, by the direct blessings of Krishna, or by the blessing, the kripa of Krishna directly, Bhagavan kripa, or by Mahant kripa, blessings of the saints. And they can give their saints, the saints can give their blessings in three different ways. One is called lochan kripa, just by their glance. And one is called Surit Harda Kripa, means heartfelt wishes, like this. So there is actually some validity to sometimes the humorous concept we have of the Shakti stick. And Prabhupada used to joke about that master yogis would take a stick and they say, I have all my Shakti in a stick and I'm touching this Shakti, the stick to your head and giving you all the energy. And then he would touch you and then you faint on the ground. And Guru, what happened? Oh, I give you all the energy. I don't have any more. I lost all my energy. I transferred it all to you. So Prabhupada would make some joke about that. But it is a fact that, I mean, kripa is also energy. Energy means shakti. It's called kripa shakti. Energy means potency, shakti, power. And kripa is one of the shaktis, kripa shakti murti. So the one way is lochan kripa, or prasanna drishti. So Bhana Maharaj is begging Narada Muni to please, you're here, just glance at my child, prasanna drishti matrena. Please cure this child with your satisfied glance. In other words, what does that mean? That means you're inside your Atmaram. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana. So inside your Atmaram, you're fixed on Narayan. You're a Narayan Bhakt. You're a Dasya Bhakt of Narayan, Shuddha Bhakt of Narayan. So Narayan's in your heart. Your Ishtadeva is in your heart. So your prasanna, your happiness, your bliss, your Atmaram, Atmaramata. Atmaramata means your tendency, your quality of being Atmaram is due to your absorption in Narayan. Narayana Vesh. You're absorbed in Narayan. Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. Narayana, 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 Narayana. When they give the Bhagavad Saptas, they always chant like this. When they get to the sixth canto in Jamil story. So he's Govinda Vishram, Narayan Vishram. Narayan is resting in your heart. And because he's resting in your heart, you're satisfied. Aptakam Atmaram. So your heart is satisfied. So when you glance, that satisfaction of your heart will come out of your eyes. Will come out of your eyes. And when you glance at my daughter, then all the satisfaction of your heart, all that creep of your heart, all that shakti of your heart, which is kripa shakti, which is the shakti of Narayan, will come out of your glance and fall upon the face of my daughter. Kirtita Sutta, Vrishabhanu Nandini. And then she will become cured. Please cure this child with your satisfied glance. He could have just said, Dristi. He said, Prasanna Dristi. Your satisfied glance. So this is important. After Narada entered the house and saw Radha, he became overwhelmed by great feelings of love and began to offer her praises in both sweet and reverential manner. So then he's starting to say, Ahuyubanam Pravavocha Narada Sarvashobanam Evam Sabhava Balayam Nasadya Daivatarapi Kintu Yadgriham Etasya Padachina Vibhushitam Tatranarayano Deva Sarva Deva Agane Saha Lakshmishcha Vasate Nityam Sarvabhischeva Siddhibi Adyayenam Vararoham Sarva Bhushna Bhushanam Devim Eva Paramgehe Raksha Yatnena Sattama. Narada called Vrishabhanu and told him about his most beautiful little girl. O king, that is the nature of this little girl. This is her sabhav. Evam sabhavam balayam. Sabhavam balayam. This is her sabhav, her nature. Even demigods are unable to cure her. But in whatever house she places her feet, there, Lord Narayan, Lakshmi, and all mystic perfections reside. O great saint. Now you should keep this girl with her nice hips, who is the ornament of ornaments. This is Varoham, Varoru. That means hips. The ornament of ornaments carefully in your house, like the supreme goddess. So he's saying that no one, even demigods, can't cure your daughter, Vrishabhanu. Anyway, wherever her feet are, don't worry. You can't see her face, you can't see her eyes, and she's not speaking, but her feet are here. Her feet are in your house. So if her feet are in your house, then you know Lakshmi Narayan will be in your house. So why worry? She may be blind, but you have a lot of money. Like Prabhupada used to say, a blind uncle is better than none. Blind uncle is better than none. So a blind daughter, especially if she's Radharani, is better than even a daughter with eyes. Although Narada spoke different reverential words about Devi Radha, it could not agitate the ocean of Maharaj Vrishabhanu's parental love at all. Vrishabhanu just affectionately fondled and reared her like his little girl. So then it's not actually being told here, but as the story goes on, I don't think it's told here, no. The story continues in Padma Puran. Is that what happens is that he goes on further to say, maybe it's told somewhere else also, but what will happen is that Narada Muni said, don't worry, because now that your daughter has appeared here, then everyone in Braj will come to celebrate the appearance of your daughter. And they'll come to visit. So surely Yashoda and Nanda will also come here. And Krishnaji will come with them. And then what happens when all the festivities are going on, and then baby Krishna, who's only a year or so older than Radharani, when he comes, then he will wander. When everyone's so absorbed in the festivities, then he will wander. In her room, and then he will stand at the end of her and her bed or cradle or whatever, and then Radharani will smell the fragrance of Krishna. and her eye, of course, she's Jaranda. She's blind and she's dumb, deaf. But when she smells the fragrance of Krishna, then she'll be cured of her disease. The fragrance, the Gandha, Krishna Gandha, the beautiful, sweet fragrance of Krishna. What is that fragrance like? It's like musk, kasturi, and like camphor and sandalwood and aguru and a blue lotus. These different fragrances combine to pervade the body of Krishna, especially in different parts of his body. So when Radharani smells that incredible fragrance, then it acts as a great medicine for her. And then first thing that happens, she becomes activated. She becomes activated because she appears to be inert. So the first activation is she starts moving her hands. And her feet start moving. And she starts making some sounds, speaking. And then Krishna sees that, oh, she's interacting with me. Because I thought she was sleeping, but she seems to be waking up. Then Krishna would start shaking, moving her bed a little bit. Like, hey, like, come on. And then Radharani opened her eyes. And when she opened her eyes, she was looked like this down. And at the end of her bed, Krishna was looking up towards her. So then it was love at first sight. Of course, it was love before first sight. But it was confirmed by the first sight. Because Radharani is always in love with Krishna at every moment, even before they meet. So then this is what happened. And then Radharani was cured suddenly by contacting Krishna, meeting Krishna. So this is true for anyone. We're all blind and dumb. We're all like in a stone-like condition in this world. Night of the living dead. We're all like Stonehenge representatives. And acting in stone-like ways. Like even they have expressions when we grew up. They used to say, oh, he's stoned. He would take some drug and then he would get stoned. They would say stoned. Stoned meant he was intoxicated. He was out of his senses. He was in some other dimension. Stoned. People are stone-like. So Krishna can activate anyone. Any soul that contacts Krishna by smell, by sound, by taste. We taste Krishna, or we hear Krishna's name, or we smell Krishna's fragrance, then we can give up our blindness and give up our stone-like nature and see Krishna eye to eye, face to face. So this, of course, sometimes it says in Lita Madhava, it describes how Radharani appeared, because she always appears as a daughter of Kirti or Kirtida. But there was one kalpa where the Vindhya mountain king, maybe sit over there, maybe the sun won't come. The Vindhya mountain king wanted to have a daughter that was more beautiful than Parvati. Because what happened is Parvati appeared as the daughter of the Himalayas. And the Himalayas, you know, he became very famous because he got Shiva for his son-in-law. It's like you might have an ordinary daughter, but if she marries the prime minister, then you become very famous. Oh, my daughter is the wife of the prime minister. Oh, yeah, very big. So Himalayan Parvat, you know, Maharaj, Himalayan Maharaj, he became very proud. He said, Shiva, Mahadev is my son-in-law. Oh, who did your daughter finally marry? You know, that daughter you had, Parvati? Oh, you don't know. She married Mahadev. Mahadev? The Mahadev? I thought he was meditating in Kailash. No, he finished that. He gave up that stuff. I saw my daughter. He said, forget about this meditation. So he married her. So then he became very proud. And then Vindhya Mountain was thinking, oh, everyone's saying, look at, he's a big mountain. And Himalayan is a relatively new mountain. It's not a very old mountain. Vindhya Mountain range is much older. And even there's a long story about that Vedic civilization was all around Badrinath. The Saraswati was flowing there, and the Ganga was flowing there, and it was a very low area. And then the mountain grew too high, and everybody had to move to south to India. This is told in ancient histories. And you read in the Bhagavatam, it said the cradle of civilization was between two rivers, the Saraswati and the Ganga. And that's up in the Himalayas. Now it's like 30,000 feet above sea level. It's in the snow. And the Saraswati disappeared. Interesting story. It used to be very, the mountain grew so fast that it got too cold. Everyone was like a few hundred feet above sea level, the Himalayas. And it started growing, and then the whole thing raised up, and it got too cold to live. So the Aryan civilization migrated from the Himalayas between the Saraswati and the Ganga. They migrated to the southern parts of India. This is what it's told. Anyway, it's a long story, but because you read in the Bhagavatam about the Badrika Ashram, Narada Muni had his ashram. Badrika Ashram is all fruit trees, and it's like tropical. When you go there now, it's just all snow. At any rate, so then Radharani was transferred. Yogamaya transferred her from the womb of Kirtida, and she entered the womb of Vindhya's wife, Radharani, because he wanted to have a daughter, Vindhya Raj, of the Vindhya Mountains. This is in Lita Mata by Rupa Goswami. He wanted to have a daughter more beautiful than Parvati. And there's no one more beautiful than Parvati than Radharani. She's the most beautiful. So then by arrangement, in one kalpa, Radharani, she appeared as a daughter of Kirtida, but she was transferred over there. And then when she was born, then Putana captured her. Putana captured two daughters from one house because it was a joint family. In India, they had joint families. The brothers lived together. So Chandrabhanu and Brishabhanu were living together. Right? Very common. Brothers live together in the same house. My friends in Delhi, Sudama, his brother, they live together with the father. So Chandrabhanu's daughter was Chandravali. And Brishabhanu's daughter is Radharani. So then Putana came and kidnapped two daughters, Chandravali and Radharani. And then when Putana was flying off and with kidnapping these daughters, and Brishabhanu and Chandra, hey, what's this? This Rakshashi is kidnapping our daughters. So he told the Brahmins, quick, chant some mantras. So they chant some tantric mantras to witch-busting mantras or something. And then she got all in a tizzy about that, and she lost her hold on the daughters, and she dropped one daughter in Dobaro, which is near Barsana. That's the village of Chandravali. And the other daughter fell in the Yamuna, and she landed in a lotus flower, or created a lotus flower as a parachute or something. She came down in a lotus parachute, and she landed in the Yamuna inside this what appeared to be a golden lotus, and right opposite Ravel, at least we tell like that, in the Yamuna. And Brishabhanu was down there doing his anak. He was doing his noon Gayatri, and he saw he was offering water, tarpan, Yamuna, to the sun god. And then he saw this beautiful golden flower with some baby inside. And then he went and he brought that girl, and that became Radharani. So this is described, one of the births of Radharani. And other kalpas, Radharani appears in Barsana, and the birthplace is commemorated there. When you go up the steps, there's a little small temple in where they commemorate the birthplace of Radharani. But in Bhakti Ratnakar, it just describes a little bit about when Radharani was born, how everybody was celebrating. Generally, we hear about Nandotsav. Nandotsav is described in Gopal Champu, although there's no describing of Banotsav. Nandotsav, Utsav means festival. And we say Mahotsav means great festival. So this is Nandotsav, means the festival of Nanda Maharaj. On Nomi, the day after Ashtami, Nanda Maharaj celebrated the birth of his son. And he was, of course, very happy to have his son at the age of 70 years old. It's not a small feat. He had black and white. His hair was black with some lots of white mixed in. He was about 70, 65 or 70. Nanda Maharaj had a son at a very late time in life, and people were surprised, so he was also happy. Nandake Anandabai, Jai Kaniya Lalaki, Hati Gori Palki, Jai Kaniya Nandik, was it Jai Kaniya Lalaki? It's a famous little song all the Hindiwalas sing in Braj Mandal. You must have heard it since you've been here. Nandake Anandabai. Nanda is full of bliss. Nanda ke Anandabai. Jai Kaniya Lala Ki. and in all glories to Kaniya Lal, his Lala, his beautiful son was born after so many years, 7 years childless, no son, no children, nothing, zero. Jai Nandake Anandabai, Jai Kaniya Lal ki. Then because he's so blissful over the birth of his son, then he starts giving charity. Hati Gori Palki. Hati means elephants. He's giving elephants in charity. And Gori means horses. And Palki means like wagons or something. Palanquins. Oh, Palki. He's giving palanquins full of gold and grains and black sesame seeds to the Brahmins. Jai Kaniya Lal ki. Hati Gori Palki. Jai Kaniya Lal ki. So what happens in Braj when you stay here on this day, then all the small children from the village, because I live basically, Radhakund is getting to be a town, but it still has a village feeling. It's now like a town instead of a small village. In 1931, there were only 1,000 people here. And now there's 11,000, 12,000. 12,000, yeah, now. Maybe more. So all the little kids come around. It's kind of like in the West, they have something called trick or treat in Halloween time. I don't know if you know what that is. But here they come around. They go all the 4 or 5, and they come around. And they sing this. They sing this mantra all together. Little kids in a high pitched voice. All the kids 3, 4, 5 years old, and they're like, they're like Kaniya Lal. They're like little kids, like Shishu Kumar, like little children. And they're in this bhava of Krishna, or little Krishna was born in this village. So they go house to house. Jai Kaniya Lal, and they beat on the door, and the little girls and boys, they go like in a chorus. It's like Christmas caroling. In the West, they have this Christmas caroling thing where people go around and sing songs about Christ. Christ is coming. Christ is born. It's a similar type of thing, actually. Jai Kaniya Lal ki, and then that means you go out and you give them toffees and you give them cookies and money and all these things, and then they're very happy. And they say, if you can make a child smile, then God smiles. If you make a child smile, then God smiles on you. There's a phrase like this. It's like one of those Mother Teresa sayings or something. If you make a child smile, then you make God smile. So now you don't hear about Banu Otsav, the festival of Banu, but Banu Maharaj was celebrating the festival of his daughter also on Nomi, after she was born, or on the same day. Bhakti Ratnakar describes, Ahai Srinivasa Deko Eraval Gram Eta Vrishabhanura Vasati Anupam Sri Radhika Prakat Hoila Sri Radhika Prakata Hohila Ekane Jahara Prakate Sukha Vyapilo Bhuvane Ajiki Ananda Vrishabhanura Mandire Janmiya Radhika Devi Kritika Udare Disha Dasha Alo Kore Rupera Chatai Je deke bhareka taratapa dure jai Sukomala tanujini kanaka labhani Ahamari kiba pati angara balani Janani janaka driti darite napare Koto sade chandamuka deke bare bare Jaya jaya kala rave Barilo bhuvan Gaoye mangala gita gopanare gan Bhaje vivira vadya Parma Rasala Nache Sakala Loka Bole Bhalo 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 Dari Duda Haldi Angane Chadaya Hase Hasaya Koto Bangi Prakashya Viprabandi Ganedan Kore Nana Bhati Deki Gana Shama Ona Ranga Suke Mati. So this is a Parakarta, one poet, his name is Ganesham. And he was maddened in bliss in his own spurti, in his vision he saw, in his meditation he was meditating deeply on Radharani and her appearance, and he had a vision of this whole scene, and he revealed it in one bhajan. So this is being recounted. Behold, O Srinivas, the village named Ravel. Ravel is across the Yamuna from Mathura, next to Gokul, where Krishna was born. This is the matchless abode of Maharaj Vrishabhanu. It is here that Radhika, Sri Radhika, appeared and filled the whole world with bliss. What bliss there is today in Vrishabhanu's abode. For today, Radhika Devi, appeared from Kirtita's womb. Her bodily luster, which illuminates all 10 directions, removes the affliction of anyone who sees it even once. Deke bareka tara tapa dure jai. The tara tap dure. All the tap, all the burning affliction. Adi atmika klesh, adi bhotika klesh, adi daivika klesh. This is kleshagni. Kleshagni, this means burning tap. Taratape, taratapa dure. Deke bareke, deke bare. You just see, ekbar, one time. Her tender body shines brighter than gold. Sukomalatanu, jini kanaka labani. Sukomalatanu, tana means body. Sukomal means her very, very soft, tender body. It shines like kanaka, jini kanaka labhani. Oh goodness, just see the elegance of each of Radha's limbs. Her mother and father could not remain calm, and they eagerly stared at Radha's moon-like face again and again. Shouts of Jai, Jai filled the whole world, and all the coward men and all the coward women sang auspicious songs. Gauye Mangala Gita Gopanari Gan. Very beautiful. Gauye. Gauye means they were singing like Mangala Gita. Auspicious song. Mangala Gita Gopanari. Nari means the wives of the Gopas. Gopanari Gan, the group. Gopanari. Is it Bengali? It's so nice. No? Gita Gopanari Gan. Gita Gopanari Gan. Gauye Mangala Gita Gopanari Gan. It's, you know, it's a song. It's so nice. We can have some vague appreciation. But. Various musical instruments were tastefully played, and all the people danced, saying, "Very well, bravo, bravo, bole, bhalo, bhalo." Bhalo is translated as bravo. Kubalo, bhalo, balachi. Achei, bhalo, bhalo. Ah, prabhu, prabhu, bhalo, bhalo. Rikshawalas always ask you, you're good, everything, bhalo, bhalo. Yes, yes, kubalo, kubalo. Kikorcho, kibolche. Mandir javo. Vishoko. Olivo. In Bengali, they're too good. Throwing yogurt, milk, and haldi around on the courtyard, they laughed and joked. Dadi duda haldi angane chadia. Anga means the extension of the house. Like anga, the extension of our body is called anga, the limbs. So the foyer, the vestibule, the veranda, the porch is called anga of the house. So they're saying making a big mess. Throwing yogurt everywhere, milk and turmeric, because turmeric is considered auspicious. They joked and laughed. Haseye hasaya koto bangi prakashiya. Making many gestures. Bangi prakash. Bangi prakash means they're bending. Prakash means they're manifesting. They're bending their bodies and making funny, you know, bangi, like we say the tree bangi. Tribangi laditam niyata prakasham. Krishna's bend in three places. Bangi means they would bend themselves like this and like that. Throw yogurt on each other. They were celebrating. Great charity was given to the Brahmins and the bards. And Ganesham was maddened with bliss when he saw this. So Vipra Bande, Vande Gane. Vande is the chanters, the poets. This is just a little bit of description of the festival. It's a festive occasion. It's an utsav, Radotsav. And for us, for Gaudiyas, this is the greatest day of the year. This is our new year. This is our old year. This is our every year. Radharani is the be-all and end-all of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. There's some songs in Hindi. Maybe it's in our sambhak. I don't remember, but says that Radharani's in my mind, Radharani's in my words, Age Radharani, Radharani's in front of me, Baya Radharani, Piche Radharani, Upa Radharani, Niche Radharani, Bahe Radharani, Radharani's to my left, Radharani's to my right, Radharani's in front of me, Radharani's behind me, Radharani's above me, Radharani's below me, Radharani's within me, Radharani's without me, everywhere is my Radharani. So of course that is a tremendous savesh absorption in Radharani that we can only hope for such a lifetime to be so absorbed. But this is there's many more things that I collected to read or discuss, but a lot of people have to go different places. So this is some remembrance of Radharani's appearance and and the tattva that she represents, and the invitation that she's giving everyone to join her Sankirtan party, her Seva party. She wants to enlist everyone, she wants to be everyone to join her temple and to serve her deity. She has her deity Seva. She wants to engage every living entity in the service of the predominator moiety, as they say. Moiety means half. That's the Bhakti Sananda's term, moiety. So this is the invitation that Radharani reminds us of on Radhastami, that come and join me, cooperate with me. Why fight against me? Because you fight against me, then I have to show you my other side. My other side is Durga. I am Durga, I am Radha. So if you go against me, then I have to show you Durga. First of all, you don't like my carrier. Durga rides on a tiger. Or lion, I'm not sure which. Tiger or lion? Lion? Or as Indians say, loyan. They say loyan. Many Indians say loyan. It's a tiger? And it's stripes or no? I believe it's a tiger because the Shiva meditates on a tiger's skin. So there's a connection of the symbology that the tiger represents. I forget, in some of the Gita Press books they describe all these things. I read once, I can't remember. But the tiger represents, of course, you know, the fear of death, and Shiva's conquered that, so he sits on it. He sits on the tiger skin. And so she rides in a tiger and she has all kinds of weapons. The main one is the trident. Trishun, or Trishul, never represents the three gunas, Tamagun, Rajagun, and Sattvagun. So pretty much that's enough to keep us busy. That's enough to keep the conditioned souls in place. She doesn't need to use her daggers and clubs and swords and other assorted weapons. Just in case we escape the Trishun, then she has a few others to keep us in line. So therefore, her name is Durga. Dura means difficult and Ga means going or moving, Durga. So it's very difficult. The material world is called Durga, fortress, a prison. It's very difficult to move in this plane. Everyone has to work very hard to get sense gratification. You have to work very, very hard to get money, to make arrangements, to get that person, to get that place, and to have that thing happen the way you want it to happen, to get what you want to have. And these impediments and obstacles are Durga's contribution, because she really wants us to cooperate with her and be assistance to her service to Krishna, because everyone is actually meant to serve Krishna in cooperation with Radhika, which I thought that article was rather a little some philosophy, simple really in one sense, but it was certainly a provocative invitation, or Radharani saying, please, don't fight me, join me. Like they say, it's better to join one than fight one. But that surrender, that requires sharanagati, and surrender is not easily purchased. Surrender is costly. Surrender is the most costly item in this world. It's very hard to purchase. It may take lakhs of lifetimes to purchase the sufficient surrender to attain the eternal service of Radharani. But the benevolent gurus and well-wishers of the Sampradaya, they make it rather easy, because they befriend us and they extend themselves to us to show us the way to surrender step by step, slowly, slowly. And they break it down. See, there's six steps to surrender. Each one is increasingly more difficult. It's easy to accept favorable things, but it's hard to reject unfavorable things. It gets harder as you go higher. To accept Krishna as everything and need nothing else. Rakshashya titi vishwaso. And atman nikshetva karapanye. The last one is karapanye, which means humility, and that's the most difficult. To be humble, even after you cross the other five forms of surrender. So this is, we pray to Radharani. She's a soft Karuna side, compassionate side of Krishna, because the prayer boxes, the prayer lines are open today. The call lines are open. You can call 800 number today, toll-free number. You can call Radharani on this day. Her phone is turned on. She's accepting calls. And you can petition her on this holy day. Many people petition Radharani with different stotras and stavas, and they pray for her mercy. Oh, please be kind upon me. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in one book that Krishna, and especially Radharani, if this is Krishna's nature, then it must be Radharani's nature even more, because even this nature in Krishna is represented by Radharani. He says that Krishna accepts the prayers of Sharanagata Vaishnavas. Because someone asked, made a question. They said, well, Krishna's busy with Leela. So how will he hear my prayers? Because he's too busy dancing and chewing pan and swinging on Julin. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, no, but those that are Sharanagata, those that are surrendered, Krishna hears their prayers. Because many people are praying to God, give me this, give me that, do this, do that. And he has a deaf ear. But when it comes to those that are actually surrendered, then they have a red line to God. They have a direct line. So we want to trace our line out to the lotus feet of Radharani. That's called a Rupanugadara. Rupanuga means Sri Rup. We say Sri Rupanugadara. Dara means the current. The current means the flow. Flow from the mountaintop to the ocean and back to the mountaintop. So the Rupanugadara means Sri Rupanugadara, and Anuga means Anugata. Those that are following the current of thought, the current of mercy, the current of action, the current of feeling of Sri Rupa Manjari and Sri Rupa Goswami. So that Sri Rupa means the form of Radha. So the Rupanugadara, the current of Rupa Goswami, means the current of Radharani, the current of Radharani's service. The Rupadara means the current that leads to Sri. Sri Rupanuga Dara. This is the current. So Gaudiya Vaishnavas that are in the mood of Manjari Bhav and Madhurya Bhav, they're following this current. They're flowing in this current and they're following this current. This current is taking them to the ocean. The Prem Sindhu of Radha Krishna's divine service in Brajagokul, Goloka Vrindavan. So we pray on this day that Sri Rupa Manjari, Sri Rupa Goswami, and our benevolent guardians of devotion will hear our prayers and boost our prayers. Like we send our message out on a cell phone, then it goes to one tower, then that tower boosts the message to the next tower, and finally it goes from here to Australia or to America. So we send our prayer out to the Guru, to Guruji, and then to Param Guru, and Paratara Guru, and Parameshti Guru. And this goes up to Rupanugadara, to Radharani. And then she gives introduction. Oh, who has made this garland? Who has made this garland? It's very nice. Who has arranged these flowers like this? Oh, this is some Sakhi of... This is some Mandri of Lokanath Goswami. I don't know, some... Acha? This is Lokanath Goswami. Isn't that Manjulali? Yeah, Manjulali Mandri. She's some servant of Manjulali. Let me see. Can I meet her? So then some introduction is given. Everywhere introduction is required. It depends on who you know. Everything depends on who you know. So, especially in that circle, we want to be known by our gurus and our guru varg. We want to be known as, he didn't do anything and she didn't do anything, but they surrendered. They did this much. And this is everything. Someone may not do anything in this world externally, but if one surrenders, then he can attain everything spiritually. Because some people aren't doers in terms of external movements of things. But the real movement is surrender. So Radharani is a personification of surrender to Krishna. She is Sharanagati personified. No one exemplifies the quality of surrender more than Radharani. So we can pray to her for her blessings that we can surrender more and more, specifically to her, and remember some of these divine thoughts that we heard from this Harmonist magazine, or so that our own lives will come in harmony with the wish of Krishna and the will of Radharani, and we someday can become her eternal servitors on the banks of Radhakund and the groves of Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janavalava Giri Varadari. Such a divine prayojana Prabhupada gave us. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote this song. He compiled this song. But this is the prayojana. And it says, Rupa Goswami says, Kaishora Safala Radha Kunja Krida. He says that Kaishora Safalam. Safal means safal, all fruits. Krishna fulfills the fruit of his youth by enjoying intimate pastimes with Radharani in the bushes of Vrindavan. Kaishora safalam. This is Rati Keli Kunje Rati Keli Kunje Radhika Kesaj or something like that. This is the fruit of his youth. This is how he spends his youth. This is all. He's only wanting to making all arrangements. He goes out with the cows. Why does he go out with the cows? For Gocharan Leela? No, he goes out with the cows so he can use it as an excuse to get out of the house, get out into the deep forest, and meet with Radhika. Because as soon as he gets in the forest, he says, oh, this looks like a very nice place. There's a very nice, cool lake here and a very big tree here with lots of shade. And you boys must be tired because I've just walked you 40 kilometers from Nandagram, so surely you must be tired. Yes, we're tired. And so why don't you rest under this huge banyan tree at Bandiravan? Yes, we will. And there's plenty of fresh water here in the Jamuna for the cows to drink. Yes, they will. And you fall asleep very deeply, deeply, deeply. Yes, we will. And they go into a deep slumber. Then Krishna says, hey, Subal, Madamangal, come. Vidagda, Kinkini, and some of the Parampreshta Sakas, who also have this Madhurya Bhav mixed in their heart. You come. So then let's go. They're all deeply sleeping. Look, Balaram is snoring. And Gobhata is snoring, Mandali Bhadra is snoring. They're deeply snoring. Sridhami's out of it, out cold. Come on, let's go. Then they go away to Radhakund for 6 hours. They get lost for 6 hours. These guys are in slumber for 6 hours. They take some heavy tiffin, some kachoris, ladu, rasgullas, samosas. And then they go out, you know, like Sunday feast. What is everyday feast for them? And you have a big Sunday feast, and you say, oh, Prabhu, I feel some tired, you know, maybe I can talk later, no? That feast was too good. So then Krishna comes back about 6 hours, and the boys are going, oh, the sun's going down. Oh, we better take the cow. Where's Krishna? Oh, there he is. Oh, Krishna, oh, we're just looking for you, you know. So this is just, you know, Krishna's excuse. Actually, Krishna's with the gopis all the time. So this is he fulfills his youth, the fruit of his youth, his kaishor, his youth is fulfilled by enjoying with Radharani. So this is a Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. The Kunja Vihari is a Kunja Vihari, and we're Kunja Vihari Das and Kunja Vihari Dasi. And this is what Prabhupada is pointing us in this direction. We were going like hell speed to hell. We were going full speed to hell. Prabhupada said, oh, wait, stop. Hey, wait. Turn around 180 degrees and said, listen, look, that's Radha, that's Krishna. Acha. That's Radha, that's Krishna. Yes. Now listen. Can you sing this? Now listen. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. So sometimes when Prabhupada would sing, you can hear in the vintage tapes, he would say Yashoda Nandana Gopi Janavalava. Then he would say Yashoda Nandana Braja Janavalava. And he's singing. It's very clear, distinctly, you can hear on the vintage tape. You can hear this, BBT has a vintage tape, or MP3. He said, and it's in his own ecstasy, because in the Padakartas, the poets of Bengal, when they write these songs, or any rustic Vaishnav, when they sing some bhajan, it's called a lankar, where they, in their own bhav, they're singing and they're meditating, you're absorbing maybe spurti, or who knows how deep they're going in the singing and meditating. And then some new vision comes in their line, they add a whole new line to the song, or they modify a line. This is we say in English, poetic license. Right? This is poetic license. So Prabhupada is singing, this is in 1966 or 67. Gopi jana val girivat Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Oh yeah, this is it. He says Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana. Then he says Gopi jana ranjana Gopi, and then they say braja jana, and then he sings again Gopi jana ranjana, which is, you know, the song is braja jana, and Prabhupada is saying Gopi jana ranjana. Ranjana means enjoying with the gopi, all the gopis. Braja jana means all the braja, you know, brijvasis, cows, boys, and father and everything. Braja jana. He says, Yashoda Nandana. So he's saying, okay, Yashoda Nandana. But then Prabhupada, okay, this song, Yashoda Nandana, this is kind of like Vatsalya Bhav, Yashoda Nandana, then Brajajana. Yashoda Nandana, he's the son of Yashoda, he's enjoying a blissful son, whatever. Then Brajajana Run. But then Prabhupada says, well, what about Radha Madhav? Gopi Jana Ranjana. And again he goes, Gopi. And everyone's singing, but they're all, ears are full of cow dung. So they're saying, Prabhupada's saying, Gopi Jana, and they're saying, Braja Jana Ranjana, and Prabhupada says Gopi Jana. Everybody, nobody heard what he said. Then he goes back and says Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari. It's really Prabhupada's bhav. I so much appreciate this tape. It really reminds me, Prabhupada just Gopi Jana Ranjana. So this is called Prayojana Tattva, the goal, the culmination, the final point. So Radharani is the queen of all servitors, the supreme personality of servitorship, Godhead. She's the queen. And the queen has so many subjects, and they assist the queen. So all the jivas, as this article is telling us, all the jivas are the subjects, or the constituents, or parts and parcels of Sri Radhika, to be assistants in her service to Krishna. It's a very exciting proposal, or job opportunity, job offering. You get some qualification in college, and you go to some multinational companies, and they say, "What is your qualification? And what are you applying for?" Well, we have this job for you. You can have this and this and this benefit. So Radharani's saying, "Listen, can you give this up for me? Can you give all this up for me and join my party? You know, we have the peace party and the pot party, and this is the prem party." This is the Seva party. Can you join my party? Because actually you're part of me. You're part and parcel of me. You're energy. You're not energetic. You're Shakti. You're not Shaktiman. You are Tatasta Shakti. Jiva Shakti. So Radharani is Ladini Shakti. Predominantly Ladini, but she's also Sanvid and Sandini also. Well, because these are also Shakti, but she predominates. Her feature of predominating is Ladini, although she has the other within her also. So this is a nice offering to live eternally in the association of Radharani and all her Sakhi girlfriends, Pran Sakhis and Priya Sakhis and all these Parma Prasya Sakhis, Priyanarma Sakhis. So this, we just have to, it's all the key word was cooperation. Cooperation. Because realization and the ensuing cooperation that follows that realization. Realization of our actual eternal position as part and parcels of Radharani's Seva Party, as her servitors. Whatever particular form we may take, whether male form or female form, still the constitutional nature, the sabhav, is female, predominated. Nanda Maharaj is female. Balaram is female, but the form appears to be male. The deer, the tigers, the lions, the trees, they're all female, but the forms may be apparently neutral or male. But their sabhav is they're all predominated, and Krishna is the predominator. Krishna is the predominator over Nanda and Balaram and everyone, and they're all seva, they're all aspects of seva. So they're all engaged in the energy of bhakti, they're all engaged in the energy of service. They're all engaged in the pleasure. So that's the female principle. It's just principle. And they're two halves of the same coin, heads and tails. Predominate. You can't have one without the others. Oh, I just take the one side of the coin, the heads, not the tails. You have to have both. So it's not that one is lesser or one is greater. The predominated can't exist without the predominator, and the predominator can't exist without the predominated. You see what happens when Krishna is without Radharani, he falls to pieces. He becomes nothing. He just, you know, can't talk, he can't walk, he can't eat, he just cries and sobs and wets his pillow all night with tears. Radha, 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 do something. I'm incomplete without my Radha. Right? And Radharani without Krishna. So Krishna is the one and everyone else is the many. Ekopahusham. Ekopahusham. He is that one and everyone else is the many. And the many are all constituents of the many one. The one predominated is Radharani, and we're all her expansions, assistants. It's a very beautiful article. We've heard it. It made some samskara in our mind, and we've heard it before also. And maybe we can get some realization about it. And with that realization will become the energetic thrust to move in the direction of perfection. Because movement requires realization, and realization requires transcendental knowledge, hearing. So this is a point we can consider. Shrimati Radharani Zavarbhav Titi Mahotsav Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Guru Gauranga Ki Jai, Sri Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya Ki Jai, Sri Guru Mahajanacharya Ki Jai, Sri Rupa Sanatan Ki Jai, Sri Shamakun Radhakun Ki Jai, Sri Giri Govardhana Ki Jai, Shrimati Radharani Ki Jai, Sri Vaishnava Sarasanga Ki Jai, Sri Brindadevi Ki Jai, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe.